So we were discussing Kaggavisana Sutta. Let me take the sutta. Right. So actually now we have come to the end of the sutta. So this is the last verse that we have to discuss. And as you all can remember, Kaggavisana Sutta is based on several verses actually explained by the Buddha. Attributed to various Pacheka Buddhas. Actually, our Buddha explains, telling that these verses are explained and these are uttered by Pacheka Buddhas at their enlightenment or at their whatever the achievement, and signifying their achievement or signifying their enlightenment. And some are actually quite interesting, and sometimes they are explaining certain aspects of their lives, certain incidents that they have gone through, certain difficulties that they have gone through. On some occasions, certain aspects of the Dhamma that they explain. Now, today is the last verse. So, it is also a quite interesting verse and quite applicable to even today. So, it goes like this. Bhajantica sevantica karanatha nikkarana dullabha ajjamitta. Attatta panya asuchi manussa eko chare kaggavisana kappo. Bhajanticha sevanticha karanatta. Now, certain people are associating us, being with us, with a kind of an ulterior motive. That is why they are with us. Nikkarana dullabha ajjamitta. If a person is associating us without such ulterior motive, then it is very rare. Attatta panya asuchi manussa. So basically, majority of people are very much like impure, and they are like shit. And because they are thinking about their own welfare, thinking about their own benefit, own profit, that is why they are associating us. Knowing this, eko chare kaggavisana kappo, one will live like a rhinoceros horn. So this is quite applicable to today, and not only to the past, even today. Many people are like that. So they may be being with us, they may appear like friends. They are always talking with us, or sometimes appreciate us, expecting something which we are not aware of. I mean, they are hiding that. There are certain hidden tendencies, or rather hidden motives, hidden agendas, which is not explained, or which is not easily retrievable. Rather, they hide that, but appear like quite good friends. They are always like helping us, always like giving us a hand, but with an ulterior motive. Nikkarna dullabha ajjamitta. So that is where the true people, true friends, who are with us even with our difficulties, without, they are with us without expecting any kind of such profit or benefit. Again, it's extremely rare. Attatta panya asuchi manusa. In general, therefore, people are like, very much like shit. So asuchi, you know the term. So they are very much like shit, because they are always thinking about their own gain. They are using us to gain something. They are using our association to get some, say, reputation. They are using our association to, say, get some other material benefits, or get a promotion, or get kind of a social status, or to become popular. But whatever it is, they have certain ulterior motives. So that is why they are very much like shit. Their inner motives are quite vicious. They are not with genuine hearts. So knowing this, eko chare kaggavisana kappo. Knowing this, one may live like a rhinoceros horn. Now, the story behind this verse is also interesting. One time there was a king in the common Varanasi. And there, the king had many wives, and again he had a large amount of ministers. Unfortunately, he went through a severe illness. So when he was going through this illness, so the queens come together and they started to, in a way, treat the king. But on the other hand, the other ministers, now they are always in search of money, in search of gain, in search of reputation, in search of, say, salaries, etc. Now they found now this illness is quite severe. So this king most probably won't recover. And now he is quite weak. As a result of that, our revenue will drop daily. So better we leave this kingdom and find someone else, find another king. So what they did was they forgot this their king, they left their king and they approached another king. And they started to serve that king because they want more material benefits. Fortunately, the previous king slowly recovered. So once he recovered, he was inquiring, where are my ministers? Who? Where is he? Where is him? So like that, he was inquiring. And then the others informed him, now they have left this kingdom. They are now serving another kingdom. Then he was little, disappointed. But later, the new king actually didn't give enough remuneration to these ministers. So they become desperate there. So again, they return back to the previous king. Now, previous king now understood, okay, these people are always going after some material benefits, gain and fame. Since they didn't receive it, they came back. Now he want to really test, is it true? He's a wise king and he was thinking, am I coming to a wrong conclusion or is it their true nature? Are they quite optimistic or rather opportunist? Are they really with that kind of an ulterior motive? They are associating me is being in this palace or in this kingdom solely because of their material benefits. Otherwise, they'll simply go. So he want to verify that. Now what he did was, he pretended like again he got the sickness. Now the other ministers again they understood, okay, now king again afflicted with the serious illness. So we better leave again to another kingdom because there is no increments here. There won't be much benefits here. We better go to another kingdom. So again they left. So after they left, again, the king recovered and he again spread the news. Now he has fully recovered. Now the ministers who left, they haven't got enough remuneration, whatever the gain and fame that they were expecting. And again, they returned. Now again, the king was quite certain. Now they are very much like not the real good friends or real loyal people, but rather they are always going after these material benefits. Likewise, several times King tested these people and ultimately he was quite disappointed about their behavior. He was thinking, I mean, these people are, even though I treat them well, they are always in search of something. They are always try to grab something, always try to going through some gain and fame. They are not respecting either me or any loyal things or any of this, but they are simply going after these material benefits, going after this monetary benefits, financial benefits. So King was quite disappointed about their behavior. Now he decided to relinquish the whole kingdom and he wanted to find a better way of life. Rather than being with these kind of people, he thought of completely relinquishing the whole kingdom and became a monk, and then he was practicing. As a result of the practice, he became a Paccheka Buddha. Now, after becoming a Paccheka Buddha, he was reflecting this incident. Now, he was quite disappointed because of his minister's behavior. So that is why he left them altogether. And their behavior is quite unacceptable. It is not ethical. So he was thinking about it, And he understood now this is the typical behavior of many people. They are associating certain people, expecting some material benefits, expecting gain and fame, expecting some something. With lot of ulterior motives, they are associating. So, if they are not getting that, they simply leave. They don't care whether you are treating them well, or you are the king, or you are the person who looked after them, or something like that. They don't have such kind of gratitude. Simply, they want to build their part. They want to become rich, either this way or that way. That is the only thing they are thinking of. And this is not uncommon today. I mean, there are many ministers, there are many members, either in the parliament or either in the another society, either in the monastery or either in any other situation, same thing. People are very much like this. They have their own ulterior motives. They are not showing it. They behave like saints, or they behave like they are really true, genuine people, but internally they are holding these kind of mean expectations. So that is why they are associating, that is why they are treating, that is why they are greeting. So all these things are very much from the marketing point of view they are doing, but internally they are expecting something. So in this subject actually we can discuss a little bit further about various friends, because this is talking about friends. Let me first talk about the bad friends. So there are four groups of bad friends, or force in the guise of friends, could they explain? Now, they are sometimes called as Anyadattuhara, the who appropriates a friend's possessions. Now, he is something always expecting something. That is what actually we were just discussed. So, he is trying to get something from the friend always. He does something little, but he expects a lot. So, Anyadattuhara. So, expecting the friend's benefits, expecting friend's possessions. So that is why he is associated. Suppose the friend is a really wealthy person, a well-to-do person. Another person is associating him because he is well-to-do. Now, because he is well-to-do, the second person can survive. So as a way of getting something, he is always associated. If there is something that he has to contribute, he contribute only a very little. But he expect a lot from the other person. So this is the person, what we call as someone who is appropriating another person's possessions, and he is called Anyadattuhara. So he is a bad friend. And on the other hand, a certain person is simply doing a lip service. He tells, okay, I will give that, I will tell that, I will help you. But only to the words. So he is kind of a person who only has words, doing kind of a lip service, but never materialize it. So his help never materialize. He doesn't really help, but he tell, okay, if you have come on that day, I would have helped you. But now I don't have. Maybe you can come on next month. But when you arrive on next month, still he has some reason to tell not to help you. So likewise, so he has a lot of beautiful words, but they are not real words. They are not, he is not true to the words. So he is called Vachi Parama. And whenever there is an opportunity, or whenever he has to help you, he never help you. He know various reasons to escape. So that is the person who is called Vachi Parama, or who simply renders lip service. He is also a bad friend. Then there is another bad friend called Anuppiya Bhani. So he actually approves everything you do. Doesn't guide you in the proper way. Rather, he approves whatever you do. Either if you do wrong thing, still he approves. If you do right thing, still he approves. And typically he prays you again and again, he prays you. But when you are not present, he actually do the backbiting. He actually with others tell that you did this, you did that. So likewise, he doesn't really praise you, rather he actually tarnish you. So this is the person called Anupriya Bhani, who flatters. He is also not a good friend. And another friend, he is the worst in a case. So he is called Apaya Sahaya, where he always take you into the wrong side. So if he is grabbing you towards the usage of, say, alcohol, say, grabbing you towards using various other intoxicants, and maybe if you are going after certain wrong people, then he is also supporting that. Say, if you are into gambling and all sorts of bad habits, he is again supporting that. So likewise, he is supporting the ruining of yourself. So he is called Apaya Sahaya. So these are the four bad friends that Buddha mentioned. So they are appear like friends. So that is why it's difficult to recognize who are the really good friends, who are the ones who simply do the lip service, who are the people appear like friends. They are not the true friends. There are four categories of true friends also Buddha mentioned. One category is called Upakaraka Mitta, helpful friend. He always want to protect you. He is protecting you when you are heedless. Assume that you are with something wrong and your behavior is wrong. So he always want to protect you. He want to guide you. He wants to make you your property also protected. Maybe your wealth protected. Maybe your children protected. When you are in a bad situation, he comes and help you. He's kind of a refuge for you. And if there is any need, he is ready to help you as well. Now assume that you are in a bad financial situation, he is ready to help you. So he's a upakaraka mitta, helpful person, helpful friend. He's a good friend. On the other hand, there's another friend called who shares one's happiness and suffering. So he actually reveals his secrets with you. And it's very much like a very trusted relationship. He trusts you and you can trust him. And he never revealed your secrets with another person. And he shares his secrets with yourself. So likewise, it's a very trust-based relationship. And he guards your secrets. And he never abandons you when there is any kind of a trouble. And he is ready even to sacrifice himself with respect to you or on behalf of you. So likewise, kind of a very true friendship is there, samana sukha dukkha mitta. So he is ready to share all the ups and downs of life with you. He never leave you when you are in an unfortunate situation. So he is a good friend. And then there's the third category Buddha explained. He's a sympathetic friend, anukampaka mitta. So he actually have some sympathetic attitude towards you. He's in a better position. So he's having some sort of a sympathetic attitude in himself. So he actually, when you are rejoicing, he also rejoices. And if you are in a misfortune, he actually want to help you. And he sympathizes you. And if there is someone dispraising you, he actually stops that. But if someone is praising you, then he encourages that. So he is a kind of an anukampaka, a sympathetic friend. He is also a good friend. The last friend is very much the kind of the teachers, Kalyana Mittas, who are in the situation of a teacher, who is called Attakkai. He always points you the good path, the correct thing, what is correct, what is wrong, always wanting you to do the correct thing, be in the right path. So likewise, he is always trying to restrain you from the wrong things and put you in the correct path, in the correct thing, the wholesome path. And if you are missing certain understanding, then he likes to teach you that. And he tries to show you the correct path, maybe the path to the heaven or path to the Nibbana or whatever it is. So we can define it that way. So likewise, he is a person who always expecting something good to you. Attakkai. So he points out what is good to you. So he is also a good friend. So likewise, Buddha explained four categories of good friends and four categories of bad friends. And particularly in this verse, this bad friend situation is explained Yeah, people are there. Simply, they are always being with you, but with lot of ulterior motives. If you are in trouble, they simply abandon you. But when you are in good health and you are with a lot of gain and fame, then they are around you because you have a lot of things and they are able to benefit from that. But when you are in trouble, they simply leave. So they are with ulterior motive associating you. So they are like kind of a shitty. They are not the true friends. So knowing this, that people are coming towards me not for my own benefit, not to help me, rather to get some benefit from me. Knowing that, let me live alone like a rhinoceros horn. So this is the verse. So this particular Pachyeka Buddha explained, and so this actually ends the Sutta Nipata based this Kaggavisana Sutta, and probably now we can take a different sutta from next time, from next week. And with that, I like to conclude today's Dhamma sermon. Now I like to get on to the question and answer session.
Avasarai Bante. We have
Can you little talk louder? Fine. I increase the volume.
Can you hear me now, Bante? So we have five questions today. First question. Dear Venerable Sir, during the walking, this is a walking practice question. During the walking practice, I focus on my left and right feet and the sensations on the soles. I can feel the pressure on the soles and how the weight distributes, hard and soft touches, and also some hot and cold patches on the sole. I can observe the differences between the left foot and the right foot as well. Recently, I noticed that even though these sensations are real and strong, I still verbalize the movements of the legs using the thoughts such as left leg, right leg, how the legs move, etc. The observations and very subtle verbalizations are both happening during the walking process. Much merits for your advice if I should increase the focus on the observations to silence the mind and remove the subtle verbalization with metta. That's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, answer is with you. So basically, if you want to go deeper, then you have to put full strength to that, full energy to that. So you can't do that when you are verbalizing. When you do this manihikirima, the verbalization, when you do that, certain amount of energy being wasted there, and you have to do this mental verbalization. But if you stop that, so that energy also can be used to quiet observation. So that further improves your understanding. You can further say refine your focus, and again the mind will further say concentrate. Because if you do some verbalization, then mind can't penetrate, or mind might simply stay in a particular level without being able to further refine. But if you are able to stop verbalization altogether, then mind has the freedom to further refine. So therefore, you can of course stop verbalization and simply look at the phenomena with a very silent mind, then you are able to further deeply understand what is really going on.
Question number two of five, this is related to the Dhamma sermon. Dear Bante, many times I have heard the argument that bare attention or just mindfulness or sati matra, here now I am, is wrong because it relies on I am from the onset and there is fully scale conceit in this concept and practice. However, last week for a Q&A question related to the Dhamma talk, you replied that self-view, Sakkaya Ditti, is a more of a gross form compared to mana, conceit, and they have a similarity as a defilement and can be linked. Also, you explained from the sutta that it is required to get rid of Sakkaya Ditti first and enter the liberation path before we get rid of mana. At the last stage, only at the enlightenment. Can this answer the question around here now I am, since it is very clear that getting rid of conceit is systematic and cannot be done from the onset with metta? That's the end of the question.
Yes. Actually, I agree with you because mana is a very subtle defilement. Of course, it is available in the gross form as well. That is why people are extremely conceited. So that also has to be removed, but still very subtle form of measuring or conceit is available. So in order to remove that, you need to have a fairly, very refined mind, very clear comprehension, and say fair amount of understanding, an observation of the mind very in a very best way of observation. Now otherwise we simply can't recognize it. Now Sakkayaditti, on the other hand, as we discussed last time, it is based on taking the whole thing as a one unit. So taking the whole body as the person, taking whole spectrum of feelings as a person, taking all spectrum of perceptions as a person. So these are my thinking, this is my degrees, this is my language. So likewise, we have so many other different types of perceptions, taking whole thing as a person, and then various skills, various thoughts, various mental patterns. So all these sanskara, mental formations, taking as myself. And knowing part also taking as a person. So during the meditation, so certain parts of them are really challenged. Say for example, during the Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation, taking the whole body as a person is really being challenged. Now what you don't have a kind of a compact body. What you have is a kind of an accumulation of very subtle particles or subtle energies, kind of a flux. So there you can't consider a person exist. So a huge impact, a blow is there for the Sakkayaditti when you are going through this disintegration or removing the compactness. And again, once you realize the impermanence, so that will break the continuity. So we thinking that because when something happens very quickly, we feel it like exist. We feel like there is something. It's very much like, suppose there is a fire, there is a fire at the end of a thread, and you are rotating that thread. Then it appears like a kind of a circle, but there is no real circle there. But constantly this fire point being located at various points. Altogether, when it is happening very rapidly, it appears like a circle, fire circle. But when you are improving your vipassana, when you are furthering your vipassana, so you will understand the impermanent nature. So it's very quickly things are arising and passing away. When you are understanding this impermanent nature, so you break this continuity. So continuity also another kind of wrong view, or rather something promoting the personality view, because you feel that I exist. I was there in the past, now I am existing, and tomorrow and next year also I will exist. So that kind of a continuity is helping to develop Sakkayaditti. But when you break that continuity, understanding that constantly things are arising and passing away, so you are giving another blow to this Sakkayaditti. So likewise, these vipassana practices actually helps to penetrate Sakkayaditti. But when it comes to conceit, it is more and more subtle. So for that, actually, we have to observe the mind very carefully, how we do measuring with respect to myself and another person quite often, and how it is generating some kind of unsatisfactoriness to the mind, and how eye making and mind making happens inside the mind. So likewise, very subtle aspects of the defilements have to be observed, then only the asvimana could be removed. So even though I am telling you, I also have it. So don't think that I am an arahant. So basically, so this is the strategies that Buddha explained. So the Sakkayaditti is more gross form. The asvimana is even a more subtle form.
I'm sorry, Bhante. Question number 3 of 7. This is a general question. Dear Swaminathan, from yours or other venerables' experience, are there any mindfulness practices that a practitioner who knows the basic techniques of mindfulness and who can establish mindfulness easily can focus on during a severe illness like COVID? Much merits for your guidance. That's the end of the question.
Can you repeat the last statement, Chakri?
Yeah. So the last sentence is, and who can establish a mind, establish mindfulness easily can focus on during a severe illness like COVID.
Right.
That's the end of the question.
So I think, I mean, if one has a fair amount of, Vedananupassana practice, so he has gone through certain different kinds of feelings, painful feelings, before he get into this kind of critical situation. But that is why Bhante Dhammajiva is always emphasizing the preventive aspect of the mindfulness. So you are, at the moment you are not in the trouble, but you are developing mindfulness. So that development actually helps when you are really in the trouble. So you are well trained. So this troubled time, therefore you can endure, and the various pains, aches that you go through, you can recognize without really identifying with them. So what really happens is that we are adding another personal view to these feelings. There are painful feelings, but on top of that, we add a person. I am suffering. Why poor me? Why it happens to me? So always we are putting a self onto the picture, so that aggravates the situation. But if you are doing, say, vipassana, say, vedananupassana particularly, so you are able to recognize various feelings as feelings. You are able to have a kind of a distance between the feeling and your observation. So observation is one thing. These feelings are another thing. So you are able to have a kind of a distant observation, unattached observation. Painful feelings are there. That's it. You are not adding another personal view onto that. You are not adding additional pain onto that. You are not adding a mental pain to the picture. So that is therefore quite useful. So you are limiting your pain only to the bodily part, physical part. So if you are able to do such that kind of a practice, train yourself beforehand, before you get into a real trouble. Assume that you are today developing mindfulness. You are going through some Vedananupassana. For that, you are using quite mundane type of different feelings, painful feelings. Say, while you are sitting cross-legged, after, say, 45 minutes, body aches. Rather than quickly gets up, you are maintaining your posture and try to recognize those painful feelings. Now you are training your mind. And you are now probably able to understand, okay, these are merely feelings. I can watch them as an outsider. So assume now you are in a real trouble. Now you contacted COVID. Now your body is really in a trouble, going through severe pains. You can try now to apply that training here. Different painful feelings are there. Let me look at them objectively. So therefore, of course, if you are practicing Vedananupassana, you get a better chance, better opportunity to endure these severe illnesses.
Question number 4 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, last week I asked the question regarding what to focus on when something goes wrong. To quickly recap, I said that when something in day-to-day life goes wrong, I feel the emotions coming and I focus on the rising and passing away of them. And also sometimes I focus on how the eye making is happening, and I can focus on why that issue has become a problem for me, such as I am better, I failed, etc. My question was, which one should I focus on, the emotions or eye making? Bhante advised that I should focus on whatever is prominent at the time, and that sometimes I won't be able to pick and choose. My question today is, how is this process related to mindfulness practice? Does it have any relevance to realization of Dhamma, or is this merely a byproduct? Much merits for your answers as always, with metta. I think that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually it relates to the mindfulness practice, but not to the, say, the early stages. But when you reach Dhammanupassana, so the understanding different levels of clinging is explained at the what you call the aggregates level. There are khanda pabba, so they are the arising of the clinging aggregates are springing aggregates are to be observed. Say here, actually assume that say you have done something good. So it is something that already happened. But now you have a kind of a memory about it. And now you attach to that memory. You recall that memory. So this is an arising of, say, we can call it as a, say, sankhara khanda, the mental formations. Now, when we are now attached to mental formations, so when such kind of clinging or grasping happens, if we are able to recognize it, we can let go of it without promoting it. So likewise, so eye making and mind making always happens because of the clinging. So Buddha mentioned, so is it possible to, or rather encourage us to recognize this clinging happens with respect to the five aggregates? Either we are clinging to the form aggregate, either we are clinging to feelings aggregate, or we are clinging to perceptions aggregate, or we are clinging to mental formations, or we are clinging to the consciousness, so the knowing part. Different time, maybe different clingings. So whenever it is happening, the clinging happens, grasping happens, if we are able to recognize it, then it cannot produce any I, it cannot produce any person, it cannot produce I making, mind making, etc. So therefore it is quite relevant to mindfulness practice, and it is available a little later in the Dhammanupassana level.
Question number 5 of 8. This is a question about the Dhamma sermon. Dear Bande, today's Dhamma sermon, regarding the verse, friends without any motive are rare. In our mindfulness practice also, there is a motive to achieve something in search of something. Will this motivation also relinquish at the end of our practice when we realize the ultimate truth? Is this something natural or something we need to be mindful and to contemplate about? With metta, that's the end of the question.
Yeah, actually, this is a very interesting question. Actually, explained by Venerable Ananda. So he explained that we can start with kind of a craving. So we have a desire to achieve. Desire to become a Sotapanna, desire to become a Sakadagami, desire to become an Anagami. So likewise, we have certain desire. So that desire actually motivates us. Still I didn't get it. Still I am not there. So likewise, kind of a Domanasa is arising. A little bit of despair is arising, but it motivates us. I have to achieve it. I have to do it. So likewise, kind of a motivation arises. But ultimately, the very desire has to be abandoned. So we are having a desire to end the desire in that sense. So there is a desire, but ultimately that very desire has to be abandoned. Therefore, it's a very tricky, or rather than tricky, kind of an interesting path. So there is a desire to achieve something, but as we are moving forward, that very desire has to be abandoned. Then only one can be fully satisfied or completely contented with the present situation. So therefore, what you are telling is quite true, quite relevant. So even in the spiritual practice, so such motivation is useful, but later, so that very motivation, that very desire also has to be abandoned.
Question number 6 of 8. This one is a general question. Dear Venerable Bante, I dedicate the weekend to practice. I want to practice sitting and walking and listen to recorded Dhamma talks. However, I found that my body is sort of releasing tiredness and makes me sleep after lunch. However, I am wide awake at night and need only a few hours to sleep. Your advice is much appreciated. With metta, that's the end of the question.
So I think it's a different lifestyle. There are certain people, they can practice during the daytime. Maybe in the morning or during the evening, and some others actually they prefer to practice during the night. So it depends on the people. I mean, there is no definite answer that everybody should practice like this. We can't say so, but you have to experiment yourself. What is the most suitable time for me? You can try during the morning time, you can try during the afternoon, you can try during the evening, and maybe you can try during the middle of the night as well. And there, if you found, okay, during the middle of the night, so there are no any sounds, no disturbances, my mind is also quite awake, probably you can try that, no, there is no harm. On the other hand, assume if you feel that it's good to practice during the evening, I have more energy during that time, so you can practice like that. So you have to explore what is the most suitable time for you, and it varies from person to person. And again, even for you, during a certain period of time, a particular time may be useful, but after several years, probably you have to adjust. Probably now the morning would be better, or maybe the evening would be better. So likewise, even your own life, things can change. So you can't have a permanent answer for this kind of a situation. Things can change actually.
Question number 7 of 8. This is a general question. Dear Bhante, would you kindly direct where to find Buddha Wanshaya in the Pitaka? Thank you and much merits. Hopefully that makes sense.
Yeah. So Buddha Wanshaya, I think I explained to you that. So it is available in Buddhaka Nikaya. Let me give you... So there is a book called Buddha Vansa Pali in the Kuddaka Nikaya. Kuddaka Nikaya are the short discourses of the Buddha. It basically has around 15 books. One of it is called Buddha Vansa Pali. So I can give you the link to that, which is actually available in the internet. And it is available in the internet. And now what I am sharing is in Sinhala. So hope you can understand that as well. So I am sharing that to everyone. So you can recognize this is the Buddha Vansa Pali in the internet, shared by Tipitaka.lk. Yeah, it is in Buddhaka Nikaya, the shorter discourses of the Buddha. Sutta Pitaka.
Okay, thank you. We received it. Question number 8 of 8, this is the last one, general question. Dear Venerable Bhante, in listening to Kamadhan, I have heard in parallel to the improvement of practice, there needs to be hitta hadima. I wonder whether Bhante is referring as mind feels kala kirima, feel down, slowing the virya when need to be applied. Is this what's meant by that Bhante? That needs to be fixed in parallel. Greatly appreciated and much merits with metta. That's the end of the question.
So if I understood the question properly, Chatu, is he asking, there can be a kind of a disappointment, kalakirima, during the practice, how to overcome that? Or is he asking something like that? Or is this possible? Is it asking like that?
So I think it says, so what they say is, there needs to be a hitta hadima.
Hadima. Uh-huh.
Yeah. And then they ask, then they ask all that in, like, in comparison, I guess. Is that what you meant by that, hitta hadima?
Kind of a disenchantment can happen. So it is not the typical kind of disappointment. Say, assume that you lost your pet. There's a kind of a sorrow in yourself. So this is not the disenchantment that we call in Vipassana. So that is, what we are now explaining is kind of a mundane type of disappointment, because your pet has passed away. Say your loved one has passed away, or the political situation is hopeless. So you have a kind of a disappointment. So likewise, this is mundane type of disappointment. But the disenchantment, nibbida, what we call, discuss in the insight meditation, is quite different, where it is based on the understanding. Say you go through a fair amount of observation of various phenomena, and they are always showing their impermanent nature, transient nature, unsatisfactory nature, non-self nature. Now you are giving up. Now you don't want to hold it. You feel disenchantment, disenchanted. You feel that there is no worth of holding this. You feel that this is not me or myself. So because fair amount of understanding you have gained, that is the important thing. So therefore, the typical mundane type of disappointment and the kind of a disenchantment what we are talking in the Vipassana is quite different. I hope you got the point. If not, you can raise your hand and ask the question.
And so that actually ends all the questions today, and we've got a bit of time. So yes, if that person or anyone else wants to ask a question, now's the time. You can raise your hand, and we'll unmute you. So we've got, yeah, about 10 minutes anyway up our sleeve. So maybe we'll give maybe about 30 seconds if you want. You can put any questions directly to Bhante.
Okay, good. No question.
Yep. Okay. So we can end. Yeah. And yes, I didn't realize you come from a retreat. So we can finish up quickly. So with that, we'd like to end the program for today. I'd first like to thank Bhante and pass on, all our merits that we've accrued, to help with your journey. And secondly, to the people working behind the scenes, seen and unseen, making this program happen. And lastly, to the participants, because without you, we could not continue. So with that, I'd like to end. Theravan Sanai.
Yeah, Theravan Sanai.